Hello and welcome to the Fox Football Podcast for yet another week. Looking forward to this one today immensely, Simon Hill. We've got a great guest in the studio, plenty to talk about.
And he's also a huge fan of the podcast. He told me a couple of weeks ago. He wanted to be on.
Long-time listener, first-time guest. He, of course, has played for the Central Coast Mariners, Brisbane Roar, Melbourne City, Western Sydney Wanderers, now Sydney FC. More clubs than Paris Hilton he's been to, but he's in for the podcast today. Andrew Redmayne, also a Socceroo. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you, Redders. How was Japan? We'll talk about the Mariners game presently, but how was Japan?
Japan's an amazing country. I love it. We had our honeymoon there a couple of years ago and love as a country, but we were involved in a full field game of Sheva and we never really got out of the middle.
That was tough. I mean, to be honest, I called the game along with Andy Harper. It was, as a neutral, brilliant to watch from Yokohama F Marinos, but they were tough to even lay a glove on.
They set up phenomenally. I spoke to Ange after the game and he even said, we're in a purple patch and we're pretty crash hot at the moment. So, it was a bit of a lesson. But having said that, we were 3 weeks without a game and we're a bit underdone. And I think it showed on the weekend. Once we do have regular games and get in that groove, then we're in a good stead.
Do you get to a point during a game, because obviously they were going to win the game, you know, once they got the first, second goal, it must be almost so difficult to retain your concentration and think through the haze. I think we described it as maybe the heads turn into mush a little bit because they were so dominant. With the greatest respect to Sydney FC, they were absolutely terrific on the ball. How difficult is it to get yourself through that game mentally?
I think Wilk said after about 20 minutes he just wanted the ground to swallow him up and the game to be done with, and most of us were probably feeling that way. We got through it, and I think you have to just keep plodding along and try new things. And we were working on a few new things for that game, and we kind of implemented them more in the second half and just kind of threw caution to the wind.
Big turnaround, though. 7-goal turnaround for Sydney. You went and beat Central Coast 3-0 after losing 4-0. Yokohama lost to Gumba Osaka on the weekend, Ange's team.
So it can
change very quickly. You had Ange as a under-20s coach just before you went to the under-20s World Cup. There was a change, but he was your inaugural coach. What did you have to say apart from that initial conversation that you just mentioned?
Oh, just family in general, football in general. Spoke about how he's doing in Japan, how his family's enjoying it. Spoke about my kind of journey to where I am now, and we're both thoroughly enjoying footballing prosperities, I guess.
Could you sense in him, even at that young age, that he had something special in him as a coach?
Yeah, he was such a driven person that always had his strong philosophies and beliefs on how he wanted a team to set up. And I was fortunate enough to be with him in Brisbane as well, and you could see it there as well. He knows what he wants and he knows how to get it.
Redders, just on the Champions League in general, and it's easy to be very negative in the wake of the week that the Australian teams have had. All three teams lost. We haven't had a qualifier from the group stage since 2016. There is the potential that we might even lose a qualifying slot due to the AFC coefficients. Maybe we'll be saved by the expansion of the competition. But in your opinion, how far off are we being ultra-competitive? I'm not just talking about winning the odd game in the Champions League, which is difficult enough, but actually getting regularly to the knockout phase and even the latter stages of the competition. How big a leap is it, I suppose, is the question I'm asking overall.
I don't think we're too far away, but I still think it's a huge leap in terms of footballing quality, the depth of our squads, budget is a huge factor as well. Training facilities, all those kind of things need to take a step up if we are to seriously challenge in Asia. And like you said, we are challenging for one-off games here and there. And I think I can only speak from Sydney's point of view. I mean, playing Marinos last week, every other team is playing for second in that group. And we think we have a red-hot chance of qualifying second.
That'd be great. I mean, you showed signs in the Champions League last year that you could have got through the group. There was a game at home against
Shanghai
with Hulk and Oscar where you had them. You were really on top and in stages and just couldn't quite close the game out. So hopefully that experience will lead to something better this time around. And the victory have had some good patches in the Asian Champions League, and the Glory were unlucky to lose. So, you know, it's one game in, yes, nothing from it, but there's some positives there, I think, for Australia moving through.
Is it just those fine margins? I mean, I've just sort of recollected that game against Shanghai SIPG. I think it was injury time, and Josh Berlante dwells that extra quarter of a second on the ball, loses out, bang, the ball's in the back of the net. Is it literally down to those fine margins, or is it something else?
Yeah, it is. You make a slight mistake in the A-League and a team might not have the quality to capitalise on that, but you make that against someone making $52 million a year in Shanghai SIPG and they have more than enough quality to capitalise on the slightest of mistakes. Mm.
Something to be wary of. Looking forward to getting through your career, Redders. You've got some awesome stories, some wonderful tales from a human point of view, but also a footballing point of view, which I think will be of a lot of interest to people. So we'll go through that later on. The journey from where you were to where you are now, flying and representing the Socceroos is a wonderful one. So looking forward to that. But Simon, what caught your eye this week before we rip into some of the A-League stuff?
Well, a bit of news that obviously I hope to have on the website in the next 24-36 hours. The A-League's mid-season reports, they've become, I think I'm right in saying, the first code to do a full investigation into the sport's digital footprint, which obviously in the current media landscape is very pertinent. And amid the current doom and gloom, there are some pretty encouraging signs, to be honest, which may not surprise many of us that know that the demographic of this game is very young,
yeah,
that they have a big digital footprint across things like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube. I know you're big on Instagram, Garby, as well. And a lot of those figures suggest that actually the engagement with the A-League is very good and, most importantly, is actually growing. So I think that's a huge positive. I'm trying to, at the moment, you know, make sense of all the numbers at the moment. It's pretty complicated stuff and there's a lot of graphs and pie charts, etc., to go through. But overall, the picture is much more encouraging than perhaps some media reports would have us believe, which I think is great.
So does this tie into, because a lot of people say, oh, the ratings are down and they just go by that. And the FFA have said for a while, if you look at all the indicators, yep, and metrics, it's not just about TV ratings. Of course, they are incredibly important, but people are absorbing the A-League in different ways through streaming, through highlights. You know, the crowds are solid, so obviously some young people go to the games. But it's not just about those raw TV numbers, which a lot of people use perhaps as a battering ram at times.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to try and dig out actually the little piece of paper that I have with me. It's more than that. It's a full report. I'll give you one example. So Australia's most digitally engaged sport is the title, a part of this particular segment of the research that they've done. Across these digital platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter, the engagement for football is 72% on Facebook. For rugby league, it's 71%. For rugby union, it's 70%. AFL, it's 71%. Cricket, it's 69%. So we're on par, actually slightly in front of all the other codes on that one. YouTube, football, 55%. Rugby league, 48%. Rugby union, 52%. AFL, 48%. Cricket, 46%. Instagram, similar story, 36%, bigger than any of the other codes. Snapchat, similar, bigger than any of the other codes, including cricket. Twitter, exactly the same story.
Twitter's no surprise.
Yeah, exactly. And so this sort of underlines the fact that while people are looking at the old linear ratings, which is understandable,
yeah,
that content that we at Fox Sports obviously make is going out in 1,000 different platforms, sure, digitally and being consumed in a very different way and being consumed in many cases in bigger numbers than the other sports. And of course, as we all know, you know, the landscape, media, everything else is changing due to technology. I think this is actually pretty good news.
Is that
football,
just Australian football or world football?
On that one, it says football. Now, to be honest, I don't know whether that's a breakdown, right, with A-League or European football, but it's football.
Okay.
There are specifics throughout this report that do refer to the A-League. I can tell you that the general trend is the same.
Okay.
That A-League engagement is up overall. There are one or two where it's down, obviously, yeah, but overall the trend is up in terms of this digital space. And I think that's good.
That is positive. Do you notice that, Redders? Do you notice that you connect with a lot of young people as a player and a star of the league who are engaged in the league that perhaps the raw figures that we talk about don't always represent?
Yeah, I think so. I really like how A-League clubs go around to the fence and sign shirts and take photos after games as well. I think that's something that's unique to the A-League and the sporting landscape in Australia. I haven't really seen it in any other code in Australia, and I really embrace it, and I enjoy being out and involved in it.
What happens when if you cop three in a game? Are you still eager to go over to the fence?
Not so much. It might just be a high five and walk him. We still put in time as rare as the loss has been for Sydney FC at the moment.
But you've got a vibrant, connected fan base. Not every club can say that at the moment because results often dictate how that goes. But you must feel as if you've got, you know, a wonderful environment there in terms of fan engagement at Sydney FC.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have seen displacement from Allianz being a negative, but I think Sydney FC has really embraced it, and being in these smaller community grounds like Jubilee, Leichhardt Oval, the club has really embraced engaging the larger community and bringing more people into the ground.
Do you prefer playing at those grounds, Redders?
I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it.
Because the fans are closer to the pitch and it's more intimate and you get a better atmos.
Yeah, absolutely. I know my family and friends like it as well. They like taking a picnic blanket at Jubilee and sitting up on the hill, and they wholeheartedly love that. And I think Leichhardt Oval is a phenomenal ground that's totally unutilised.
Completely agree.
What caught my eye this week? Nikita Rukavica scoring again, 6 clear as the Golden Boot leader in Israel. I don't care what league you're playing in. 17 goals in 25 games as an Aussie striker is something for national team coaches to take notice of. And they're sitting second in the league. And, yeah, some people will go, oh, the Israeli league is rubbish. Well, they play in the Europa League and Champions League more often than not, the top couple teams, and they're in those positions. So it's a good standard. But what caught my eye more than anything else was after Chelsea's win over Spurs, the job that Frank Lampard's done at Chelsea this season. You know, when you consider at the start of the season, he lost Eden Hazard and couldn't replace him because they had a transfer ban. So he's played kids through the season: Tammy Abraham, Pulisic, Mason Mount, Reece James, Tomori, a bunch of kids in that starting 11, and they're still sitting fourth, and they're in the next stage of the Champions League. You know, they could still fade because they've got a raw young squad, but after beating Mourinho again on the weekend, they're in pole position for that top four spot. Love the way he speaks before games, after games. This is a job, remember, that he's probably got ahead of time. He wasn't necessarily ready for, but Abramovich begged him to take it because of that transfer ban and the predicament they were in. I just think he's done a fantastic job. I've loved watching him go about it.
What a pity we didn't get to see him play in the A-League. Because, of course, he was slated to. Melbourne City wanted to bring him here, and the FFA refused because they couldn't fit him under the cap, given his, you know, obviously extravagant wage. So they tried to get him, as I understand it, on minimum wage, with the City Football Group picking up the rest of it. And the FFA, I think back in the day, decided that that was a bit unfair to the other clubs.
I interviewed him about that very subject at the Etihad when he was at Man City, because he just went there afterwards.
That's right.
And he said, his exact quote was, I would have been up for that. I would have looked forward to that.
Yeah. Incredible, eh?
But because they had David Villa, the FFA said, oh, no, it's too much. I think they would have done that today. They would have changed the rules in a heartbeat, which they should have done then.
Anyway.
Redders, you're a fan of the podcast, as we said off the top, so you were ready for this segment. What caught your eye this week?
I've actually got three things.
Whoa.
First of all, being a boutique venue, sold out at Brisbane. Love seeing it.
Terrific.
Our two young boys also caught my eyes, debut goals, Tilio and Van der Sag. And also the Matildas girls doing well in London. Scoring.
Caitlin Ford.
On debut, yeah.
On debut for Arsenal.
Amazing.
With an Aussie coach, Joe Montemiro.
Yeah.
A win for them, so that was great to see. A nice tap in for Caitlin, but getting off the mark is crucial, the most important thing.
On the women's game as well, congratulations to Melbourne City, winning another W League Premiership. Can they back it up and win title number 4?
Yeah, and won it with weeks to spare, of course. So that'll be interesting come the W League finals. So, Redders, let's start with Sydney FC. You cruised yesterday over Central Coast. We've spoken about Sydney a bit. We'll get onto them in more detail. But the Mariners, firstly, they've fallen in a heap now. So 6 straight losses. And something just, when I saw their team sheet before the game yesterday, something to me didn't seem right. When I saw Tommy Orr, Matt Simon, Milan Djuric, Sammy Silvera, and Jair on the bench.
Heck of a bench, by the way.
Heck of a bench. But hang on. Or Simon, Juric and Silvera were their four best players at the start of the season. What's happened that they're now all on the bench and Jair, okay, he hasn't performed, well, but he's still an international striker.
Look, in mitigation, in fairness to Alan Stajic, he's tried all of those players in various different combinations at various points in the season. Just hang on. And none has been able to get the goals that he needed. They are at home, all right, but they're playing against the best team in the competition by quite some distance. They've lost prior to yesterday, was it four or five in a row? So maybe he felt that it was time to try something different. And to be fair to him, Chris Harrold, who he put at the point of the attack, right, is not a number nine, but he's quick. He can get on the shoulder of defenders, and they obviously try to play a different way. With the greatest respect to Sydney FC, and I know we've got Redders sitting here, I thought the Mariners actually played okay yesterday, and they did the week before and the week before that. The problem is they cannot score goals when they've got that dominance. So he obviously tried to do something different. All right, it didn't work, so he's going to get smashed for it. I get that. But I think he's probably at the point of the season, given the run that they're on, that he thinks, look, I've got to try something new because whatever I've tried in the past, it ain't working.
I get that, but it just sums up how things have fallen apart for them when you look at this bench compared to the way they started the season.
Correct.
And again, we had this issue with when Paul Okon was coach a couple of times. He said, oh, the Mariners have turned the corner after a couple of big wins. They're okay now. Well, I'm sorry, it's gone the other way again. Like, it really has. Six straight losses, clear on the bottom. They've fallen in a heap. It's just so concerning and such a shame.
You know, the interesting thing is, somebody told me a couple of days ago, I don't know if this is true or not, but the A-League licensing regulations state that if you win three wooden spoons in a row, not that the Mariners, I think they avoided the spoon two seasons ago, but if you win it 3 years in a row, you can theoretically be thrown out. I think that's part of the statutes. So I'm told. I might be wrong on that. I'm sure people will let me know if I am.
We'll see if if that comes into play next season, if the Mariners are in that position again. Hopefully not from their point of view. Redders, was there a strong motivation after that Yokohama result to really bounce back and make things right? What was the mindset going into the game after the trip to Japan?
Yeah, we wanted to make a statement. We wanted to come back and prove what we are and what we're about. And I think we put our best foot forward. Yes, we probably didn't control the full match as we wanted to. We kind of died off a little bit in the second half.
But that's that tiredness more than anything else?
More than expected. Yeah. Tiredness from the travel and not getting on the training pitch as much as we would have liked. But I think it was a professional performance from us.
Yeah. What about the young kids? I mean, you alluded to them at the top of the podcast. Marco Tilio on debut. Harry van der Sar comes off the bench as well and scores an absolute worldie. How good are the kids at Sydney FC? Because they've just won the Y League title as well, hammered Melbourne Victory in the grand final.
Oh, I think they're phenomenal, but I think the thing I like most about them is their work ethic. They're phenomenal. I said to Garby before the podcast, both van der Sar and Tilio both came on against Yokohama. The next day there was an optional gym session and they were in the gym hammering the treadmill, dripping in sweat, which I think is phenomenal for young players coming through to be putting in those extra yards.
That's great to hear because young players, everyone's very quick to point out when they're not doing the hard work. And you don't often hear the stories when young kids in Australian football are working. A lot of people would have heard the stories when Del Piero was in Australia. There's it might be a wives' tale, it might be true, I don't know, but there's a story going around that he asked one of the young kids to stay and put some crosses in for him after training, and the young kid said, oh, no, I can't, I've got to get home. And everyone went, oh, that sums up Australian football's problems. Here's Del Piero, a legend, asking the youngster to stay behind, and he hasn't done it. But you don't hear the stories of when the young kids are doing the extra work and they are putting in the effort and trying to become better players. So that's refreshing.
Redis, do you keep an eye, of course you keep an eye, on the goalkeepers that are coming through the club? Why wouldn't you? Because it's your jersey to lose at the moment. I know Thomas Hewitt-Bell obviously has played a few senior games, but there's a young kid there, Adam Pavlicic, who I'm led to believe had a trial at Roma of late. He's only 17, I think.
Yep.
And he's come through the John Crawley School, same as you. How good is he going to be long term?
Yeah, I think he's probably the next one that we hang our hat on. He's still young. He's only 17. He's probably a little underdone, but I think where the whole kind of conversation starts now is where's he going to play? Where's he going to get his professional football? Because as a goalkeeper, you have
because you ain't moving.
You have to get minutes under your belt. So where's he going to play?
Yeah.
We'll get into goalkeepers in Australia a bit later on when we talk about your career, because it's a big talking point right now. The production line, why isn't it as strong as previous years? Where the next players under yourself and the others in the Socceroos right now coming from? So we'll talk about that. But you've got a massive month coming up, Sydney. The derby this week. You've got Jeonbuk in the Champions League, and then the Glory, who, you know, that could be another little grand final preview potentially, looking at form. So have you guys set yourself for this next month as a real juggernaut period in the season?
Yeah, I was talking to our strength conditioning coach last week, and he said we've never, tapered or undulated our training programs this way before, and he thinks it's really going to benefit us. And yeah, all credit to him, because he's the one that gets us through these tough periods.
And the Wanderers going to the derby on a high because of that 5-2 hammering of Adelaide United, which was a crazy game, brilliant game. And look, they're in the mix for the finals. They'll be fired up for this one on Friday night. It's going to be a beauty.
It will be. The Friday's game against Adelaide was one of the craziest first 45 minutes I think I've ever called in the A-League. I think I was likening it to like two drunk boxers just slugging punches. You know, six goals in the first 37 minutes. But it was great to see from the Wanderers' point of view, you know, let's be honest, and Adelaide as well, they're probably not the best defensively, either of them. So they decided they were going to go out and have a crack. And I thought it was, you know, it was great entertainment. Probably structurally it wasn't the best game, but I thought it was hugely enjoyable. And they're building a nice little unbeaten run. Three games. It's only three, but under John Paul De Marini, they seem to have a little bit of their mojo back. Mitch Duke is firing. Yep. Nicolai Muller has found some form. Bruce Kamau was outstanding on Friday nights. That performance was terrific, highlighted by, that mazy dribble through the centre of the pitch, which led to a goal for Nicolai Muller, unfortunately ruled out for him by the VAR. But I thought that was terrific fun. And I reckon that Sydney FC, you'll have watched that game this week, Redders, and gone, right, okay, maybe this is going to be a stiffer challenge. I know they beat you in the derby earlier on in the season, but they look to be a lot stronger now than they have been in recent weeks.
Yeah, they've turned a corner, so to speak. It's going to be a fantastic event. Like I said, we love Jubilee. It's our home now, and we can't wait for Friday night. It's going to be a cracker.
Sold out, I think. Well, it was the last time, so as long as people use those tickets.
As tickets they bought, then it should be. What's it like for you when you come up against Western Sydney? Because that was such a tricky part of your career. Things didn't quite go to plan for you there. And you have spoken in the past about it being a crossroads moment in your career when you left Western Sydney and came to Sydney FC. Can you talk us through that period and what was actually going through your mind?
I was almost ready to retire. I was ready to walk away from the game. I was going to see out the length of my contract at Wanderers, and then just kind of pour coffees and continue with my study, and that was going to be it. But I was fortunate enough that John Crawley brought me into Sydney, and I won't go into how the circumstances came about, but I'm just so grateful that Sydney FC saw a quality in me. And yeah,
is it fair to say John Crawley saved your career then?
I would say that. But having said that, I think Popper and Spider saved my career at Western Sydney as well. I was told I wasn't good enough for A-League, leaving Melbourne City. So I was in limbo there, and Popper and Spider brought me in. And so I've been saved twice, I guess.
So why were you ready to retire? Had your confidence just dropped so low, or had you had enough of football?
Yeah, I think I just had enough of football. I'd lost the passion. I wasn't enjoying football. I consider myself a really hard worker, and I was still working extremely hard, but I just wasn't enjoying it. I was more or less going through the motions, and that wasn't sitting right with me.
I remember that you saying at the time, or maybe it was John Crawley or somebody talking about you, saying that at that point in your career you were overthinking the game, overthinking goalkeeping situations, desperately thinking about making the right decision. And what John did was essentially make you relax a little bit more and believe in yourself a bit more. Is that a fair summation?
Yeah, well, goalkeeping is a reactive position. You can't come short and grab a ball and turn and know what you're going to do. It's purely reactive. And I think if you are overthinking things, it does complicate everything in your head and does kind of fuzzy up your vision.
Such a tough game mentally, isn't it, being a goalkeeper?
Yeah, I think it's a harder position as well, being at a top team where you might only have one or two actions a game as opposed to a lower team where you're constantly in the game and constantly involved. It's a harder position being up the pointy end.
What was it like stepping out for Western Sydney during that period where your confidence is low, you've made a couple of mistakes, you're trying so hard to make things right, but deep down you're a bit unsure of how to go about it to get back to your best? How difficult is it walking out for a game in that mindset?
Yeah, it's tough. I think at the time, Western Sydney as a club, at Parramatta there, was always rocking the boisterous crowd and everything, and it was tough knowing that in my head I probably wasn't 100%, but you know, physically I was right to go, and I'm selected, so I have the faith of the coach and the staff, and I know I have to perform for the team as well. And it's hard not knowing that you're completely all there, but you at the same time you still are giving 100%, but it's not like you're returning 100%.
Did Sydney FC and John Crawley sort of help you with, I don't know, sports psychologists and you know, the mental side of the game? Obviously, John's a fantastic goalkeeping coach, but did they point you in the way of specialists to, you know, retrain your mind almost as much as your body?
I was seeing someone at the tail end of my time at Wanderers, and that was extremely helpful. It probably just didn't come into fruition quick enough to help me.
Interesting.
Are you enjoying it more now at Sydney because of what you've been through? I mean, do you actually appreciate this moment more because you've been to a level that was so low?
I think so, yeah, definitely. I know I enjoy my time away from football exponentially as much as well. I know where the switch is and I know how to flick it between football and non-football. So I think when I'm at football, it's 100% football, and I thoroughly enjoy it. I'm involved in the game more. I listen to the podcast. I watch games on the weekend. I'm more involved in football where I wasn't as involved when I was at Wanderers, and it's that passion that has really sparked more joy in my life.
Because you were so focused on your own performance, you almost couldn't see the bigger picture of football.
Yeah, right? I think so. Yeah. I was putting too much weight on myself and not seeing it for the pleasure and the beauty of what football is.
Yeah.
Great to hear. Great to hear. We'll get into more detail about other aspects of your career in the national team, which has obviously been a byproduct of your form resurgence at Sydney FC in recent times. Another one of your former clubs, Brisbane, had a big game on Saturday afternoon against the Glory. That was a bit of a litmus test for them, not only for the team, but for the club as well. And they delivered with 10,000 packed into Dolphin Stadium, which was great to see. And then they matched it with the Glory team, who are obviously, along with Sydney, a contender for the title.
Well, can I just echo in Redder's thoughts at the top of the podcast, playing games at boutique venues has to be the way forward, because that was so much better than Suncorp. Sorry, Suncorp. It's a great stadium. It's brilliant for grand finals. But for run-of-the-mill league games, as this was, this is just perfect. 10,000 capacity. They're also building a new stand behind that goal, 3,000, which is going to knock it up over 12,000, something like that. You know, fans close to the pitch, a lot of noise. I think the players responded. The classic game of two halves. Perth very good in the first half. Castro, wow, he still takes my breath away. Some of the stuff he does and his little combinations with Fornaroli. But a bit in common with Sydney, they tired second half because of their Champions League exertions. And Brisbane forced the issue, which they've been very good at doing this season. And in the end, I think they got a deserved share of the spoils, thanks to Macaulay Gillespie. It was a good game. I enjoyed it.
It was a good game. Strong response from Brisbane, hey, Redders. I mean, they look like they're a team that will hold that together. And the Glory just, okay, they're not at the level they were last year. You guys have replicated what they did last season. But have you got one eye on them and what they're doing this season with the knowledge of how dangerous they can be?
I think for us at Sydney FC, we focus on us as a club and only take it week by week. We know the quality we have in the change room, and we know if it all gels together on the match day, then we're going to be unstoppable. So we like to keep our focus intrinsic and stick to that belief.
Well played. Fair enough. But it could
be. That was a Jeffrey boycott, yes, right back down the middle, Garvey.
He just took down the Corica. How do I answer this question? Yeah, got it. Robbie Fowler, I mean, it was another good response from his team, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, just to match it with Perth, it was a strong display.
Well, again, this is 12 points now they've taken this season from losing positions, which shows an awful lot about their character and resilience. Look, you know, it's been well documented this season. They're probably not the best team on the eye to watch, but sometimes that doesn't matter. You've got to consider where they came from last season, where, let's be honest, they were a basket case last year. They copped 71 goals, finished ninth, only the Mariners below them. They were all over the place. So the fact that he's rebuilt this squad, all right, it's a bit workmanlike, but they've got some quality about them. And they've got resilience. And if they make the top six, I think that represents a pretty good first season for Robbie. To
fantastic. Just on Perth Glory, I've just had a message come through from Gareth Parker, who is the morning show host of 6PR.
Oh, yeah.
In Perth. And I obviously haven't heard the interview because I'm on the podcast, but he said, Garvey, tune in. I'm going large on LFE.
Ooh.
So I don't know what that means. By the time you've listened to the podcast, you probably know what he's unearthed. But I don't think you would have messaged me if it was all too positive, put it that way.
Okay, that's interesting.
So that is an interesting development on the Glory.
I tell you what, the biggest question mark against all of that is Tony Sage, bless him, says he's doing his due diligence on this new company, but he's been appointed chairman of it. So it's a strange one, all right. I just hope he gets it right for Perth and for himself, because he's put a lot of money in. And I'm sure he will. I know he loves Perth Glory, so.
Yeah, I can't see this little partnership ending well, unfortunately. Hopefully it moves in a positive direction. Wellington had another good win, too good for Western United. They wore a purple kit in support of Mental Health Foundation of New Zealand, which was great to see, but the kit was so poorly matched. It looked as if, you know, when you played amateurs on a Sunday, and someone's rocked up and you've gone, mate, where's the kit? Oh, no, I've left it at home. And everyone's wearing different kits and all that.
You're cruel, Garvey.
That's what it looked like. I like what they've done, but it was purple and blue just doesn't go together, does it?
I don't know. Redders has worn a few garish kits in his career.
Well done to the Phoenix for that. Everything they're doing right now is great, but, you know, you can laugh as well.
In terms of the football, I thought their first half performance in particular was outstanding. I mean, they just completely put their foot on the throat of Western United. Could have won the game by, you know, quite a bigger distance. Davila, I think, is excellent. There's only really Philip Curto that stood between Western United and an absolute mauling. There's got to be questions asked at the moment of Western United. They've gone throughout February without scoring a goal. One win in eight matches. Last week, they didn't have a single shot on target. This week, just two. And by all accounts, they might be copping a fine for playing Steve Lustiger when he wasn't included in the match day squad. That's the official line I've seen put out. Doesn't that happen every week, though? That clubs put out squads with players that are excluded, and then all of a sudden on the Sunday you see...
Yeah, but he wasn't registered at all.
Okay, so that's the key word.
Yeah, he wasn't registered with the club. They signed him literally 90 minutes before the game.
Well, there you go.
Announced it.
So, you know, maybe a bit of trouble at Mill, I think, at Western United.
Yeah, well, something's not right there. And the players that have left in the middle of the season, something doesn't quite add up. But Wellington, Redders, we've spoken to a couple of Sydney players this season, and they've said that's the team I know you said it's all just about what you guys are doing and all that, but because of what Uffie's done...
Stand
going
by
over
for
there,
another flat bat here.
That's the way in which they play and the way in which they prepare. It's very similar to Sydney FC, and you actually analyse who Wellington plays against week by week to see how teams try and combat them, because you can use that approach yourselves.
Yeah, quite a few Wellington clips come up in our video previews of teams and how they've tried to break them down. And I think going back to pre-season, we played them in a friendly and there wasn't too much pre-game analysis on that, and it was more or less just go out and find a way to win. It just felt like an internal game the way we set up. It was just two teams playing exactly the same.
That's because of Uffie, really, isn't it? Uffie Tallo.
Yeah, so. Yeah, he's kind of taken the blueprint that we had and tried to execute it over there. And doing very well.
The Sky blueprint.
How surprised have you been? Not just, you know, with this absolute success he's had. I mean, they're sitting fourth, getting close to the finals. I mean, I'll put my hand up. I had no idea they would do this well. Simon, you also think tipped them to finish bottom, didn't you? Or close enough?
Quite possibly.
I mean, he's done a wonderful job. Did you have any idea at all that he was capable of this as a head coach when put in that pressurising situation?
Yeah, Uffie's got that character. He's a fantastic person and a fantastic coach, and I think he has the same kind of traits as Ange Postecoglou has. He knows what he wants to do, and he's not going to deviate from that until he finds the success in that formula. And and he's done it. He's executed.
I think in mitigation to those of us who thought they'd struggle, when you looked at them in the off-season, they lost Roy Krishna.
Yeah, same thing with Uffy. It was the squad.
Yeah, they lost David Williams. They lost Sarpreet Singh, which 35 goals between them last season. You thought, wow, how are they going to find those guys? Hey, they have.
Yeah.
You know, his acquisitions, David Ball, Gary Hooper, Ulysses Davila in particular, Reno Piscopo, who's been terrific as well. They've been magic. And this obviously development from, you know, the youngsters as well. McCowart's very good. Kakache, I don't think he'll be in the A-League next year. No. I think he's that good. I think he's heading to Europe.
Devlin.
Another one.
Uffy brings young Cammy Devlin across, who'd played 5 minutes basically of A-League football, and he's playing every week in a tough position in the centre of the park. So, you know, they're a club that's functioning pretty well now, which is great to see. Amid all the turmoil of coaching changes, big players leaving, when you keep it together like that, which Sydney have done on a larger scale, Arnie to Corica, all the foreigners that have gone, the new ones have come in, and the results keep turning over, that's a massive tick for the football club.
They've actually improved.
Yeah.
They're actually, with respect to Mark Rudin, who did a great job there last year, they're actually better than they were last year, which is some achievement. That's credit to Uffy.
Wait to see how Rudes can turn things around at Western United, because they run the risk of falling way off the finals race. And I hope that's not the case because of what they've brought in terms of quality football at the start of the season. Hopefully they can get things right and get back in this race. The Newcastle Jets are going to sign Joe Ledley and Bernie Abini this week. For a team that's sitting second bottom, that shows some ambition. All right, that Joe Ledley was playing Premier League 18 months ago at Crystal Palace.
Well, obviously he knows Carl Robinson pretty well, but both good Welsh boys. Bernie Abini played under Carl at Vancouver Whitecaps, and obviously knows the A-League. So they would be two terrific signings. And I think that, along with the acquisition of Roy O'Donovan and the return of Wes Houlihan, all of a sudden Newcastle are going, oh, you know, maybe we've got half a shout here. They've got a lot of ground to make up to make the top six, need to start winning games. But yeah, I think the other thing, just on Carl Robinson, I was very intrigued to hear his thoughts when he was mic'd up by Fox Sports at the weekend. I thought it was a great initiative. It's the sort of thing that, you know, we need to be doing as a league. Fascinating for fans and players and media alike to listen to those little insights as to what the coaches are saying. So I think, you know, the Jets are looking at a bit of a relaunch, a reboot, both on the pitch and off the pitch. And I like what I see so far.
I loved listening to Carl Robinson mic'd up. I thought the way in which he spoke was fantastic.
I just love his accent, to be honest.
His accent was great. Now, I don't know if because he had a mic on, he held back in terms of swearing and things like that. I don't know. But he just seems so measured in the way in which he spoke. Have you listened to it?
Yeah, I thought it was phenomenal.
Yeah. Is that how coaches normally talk? Or was he? Did you think, oh, I think he's just harnessing it a little bit here because he's got a mic on?
I'm not sure if you could put a mic on Arnie, but a lot might be beeped out. But I think selected cases, I thought it was phenomenal getting that kind of insight into live football. Yeah,
sometimes we don't need a mic with Arnie. You didn't want him.
The way in which he spoke to the referees, I thought was measured as well. Yeah. You know, he wasn't overly critical. He was just trying to explain. You know,
who's the biggest ranter and raver? Not necessarily on the touchline, but as a coach, are you willing to go there and tell us who was, you know, the one who lost their cool the most?
I think all coaches have that switch.
Yeah.
If some,
even Steve Corica, so he looks pretty measured.
No, if he wants to flick the switch,
he blows up, does he?
Go, yeah.
Okay.
Have you noticed a change in coaches from, say, 10, 15 years ago when there was a lot of ranting and raving, to coaches now who say you've got to pick your moments to give a bake? You can only give two or three a season or else the message gets tired. Have you noticed a change in the way coaches deal with players in that regard, the new generation of players, if you like?
I think coaches take more of the brunt of criticism. I think back in the day it was more the players that cop the full brunt of criticism from a performance or whatnot. But I think from poor performances especially, coaches will put their hand up and take that brunt, and I think they take a lot of heat off the players.
So let's say you put in a bad performance and you get done 3-0 in a certain game, and the players know you haven't put in, you just haven't executed. And Bimby comes up, Steve Corica, and he says, you know, I'll take responsibility for that. He'll just wear it himself. Do players recognise that and go, hang on, the coach has just worn one for us and that's not fair, and actually try and respond? Are you aware of media messaging and those sorts of things?
Yeah, 100%. It's happened a few times. I know Bimby's done it a couple of times. He's walked in and said, I'll put my hand up for that one. And the players are like, okay, well, we need to pay faith back in Bimby and step up for the next game. And I think example this week for Sydney FC, we as players, we're probably slightly off the pace. And we said before the game, we need to go out there and put our best foot forward and right the wrongs of the midweek game.
Interesting. Players responding for a coach. That's when you know you've got a good thing going at a football club.
Sorry, I was just going to make a point. Just on the Newcastle victory game, obviously about victory. they've had a tough schedule, to be fair. That was their eighth game in 33 days. But that's now six without a win for victory. Not that their performance was all bad, but they've got two home games to come against Adelaide United and then your boys, Sydney FC. All of the next five are against teams in the top six. Can they make the finals? It looks increasingly as though it's a long shot.
Yeah.
Unless they put this run together. When's it going to start?
They've got to beat Adelaide this week.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big game for them, big rivalry. The Reds, we know, are up and down non-stop. So they've got a chance to perhaps catch them on a down week and take advantage. If they don't win this week, I don't see how they can make it.
Mm.
Not with their Asian Champions League games built into the schedule as well. Yeah. So they're in a predicament right now. Redders, let's talk about your career. It's such an interesting one. You grew up in Gosford, which has been, in the A-League era, a real hotbed for talent coming through in Australian football. Were you always a goalkeeper? Was that always your desire to be the man between the sticks?
Under 10s. Went to a school holiday clinic that Frank Farina attended. They said, is there any goalkeepers? And I said, well, I'll put my hand up. I played half a game, kind of every game, through the season that just passed. And after that first day of the school holiday clinic, Mum and I had to stop in and buy a pair of goalkeeper gloves for the next 4 days and never look back.
Awesome. Just taking you back to your teenage years when obviously you became a bit more established as a goalkeeper, I know you trialled at Sheffield United and then you went to Arsenal. I think you were 14 at the time, maybe 15. Anyway, you'll tell us the story. And they wanted to sign you, and your mum wouldn't let you go.
Not so much wouldn't let me go.
Or didn't want you to go.
Mum and dad, very much academic types.
Right.
There was a contract in front of me and mum just said, we want to think about the schooling. What would happen? How would he integrate into ATARs over there? All that kind of thing. And they said, okay, well, we'll take this away. We'll liaise with you. Hong Kong Sevens tournament was about 6 months away. They said, that'll be your final trial. We'll meet you in Hong Kong and then you'll fly from Hong Kong to London. Mum sent away for flight confirmation details to Hong Kong and they replied, we just signed another goalkeeper, so your services are no longer required.
And that goalkeeper was?
Szczesny.
Wojciech Szczesny. So do you ever think, but I know that you've still got one of your Arsenal goalkeeping jerseys because you played some trial games for, who did you play with and against? And do you ever think back to that time and think, particularly when you look at what Szczesny has done for Arsenal and other clubs in Europe and think, that should have been me?
No, I never think that should have been me. If things were different, they would be completely different. Having said that, I'm completely loving the journey that I've been on and where I've been and where it's taken me.
Who did you play with in those trial games? Did you speak to Arsene Wenger much? Did he have a direct connection with you?
No, I never spoke to Arsene. But just being in the players' lounge alongside, it was the golden era, the Freddie Ljungbergs, Sol Campbells, Van Persies, Thierry Henrys, even Mum, who never really knew any of those players. She was kind of in awe looking out and seeing Thierry Henry doing his rehab just down there and then he'd come up and have his lunch with her and, it was phenomenal.
What's your best sort of memento, apart from the Arsenal jersey that I know you still have? Do you have any, I don't know, a pair of Thierry Henry boots or a shirt signed by Pires or...?
No, nothing like that.
Nothing?
No.
Redders. Come on.
Just the memories.
Just the memories.
Did you come from a football family where football was part of your culture or did you just absorb yourself into the sport?
Yeah, not at all. I've said before, I fell into it. We were walking through a shopping centre in Lisaro and there was a Gosford City Dragons registration table and Mum said, do you want to play football? And I said, okay. And then we signed up and That's it.
And was it instant love after that? Did you fall in love with the game? Because I've read somewhere your idols growing up were Peter Schmeichel and Oliver Kahn, or is that just did that come later?
Probably came later.
Yeah.
It wasn't. Even when I was at AIS, I never really saw it as a profession or a career. It was more just I'm just doing this because I'm having a kick around with my mates and I'm enjoying working hard and being in this environment.
So you make it to the Mariners after all of that and your debut's a sub for Mark Bosnich of all people.
Who never kicked a ball again or saved a ball again.
What are your memories
of
that day?
You ended his career, Redders.
that day was a whirlwind. I played a curtain raiser for the youth team beforehand, so I'd warmed up, played 90 minutes, warmed up, and then Bozza went down in the seventh minute, so I had to play another 83 minutes.
Were you nervous?
No, I wasn't too tired to be nervous. I remember cramping up and John Hutchinson came over and said, how can a goalkeeper cramp? But it was a 30-something degree day and I'd been out on the pitch for 5 hours.
We never know what we're going to get with Bozza when we have a five-second interaction with him here in the offices at Fox or wherever. What was he like then at the end of his playing days when he was still in goalkeeper mode?
He was great. I learned so much off Bozza. It was fantastic for me as a 17-year-old to be working alongside someone of that caliber and been and done the craziest things that me as a player would only dream of, I guess, and to have him in the locker room and also training alongside him was phenomenal for me as a young boy.
Those days at the Mariners, obviously you were one of three or four goalkeepers around that time. Danny Vukovic was the number one. Bozza was there briefly. And behind you was a young kid called Matty Ryan. Were you aware of him and how good he could potentially be, or was that a surprise even to you?
No, I first saw Matty. I used to travel up to Blacktown to do extras with John Crawley on a Tuesday night. And Matty said, go have a kick around with that kid over there. He's got a great left foot and he's got an awesome side volley as well. And he did. He had a great side volley, a great left peg. And he was 14 at the time and JC knew that he had something special in him. And he was, well, circumstances came to fruition for Matty and he took his spot and the rest is history for him.
You fell after that into a bit of a journeyman goalkeeper phase, Brisbane, Melbourne City, playing a bit, on the bench a bit. What's that period like for a goalkeeper where it's just so stop-start for you?
Yeah, I think going back to what I'm saying with the next generation of goalkeepers, where do they play? So I think I didn't play for 2 years at Brisbane. I didn't play for the first year at Melbourne Heart, and then I've kind of been thrust into a position in the spotlight in arguably one of the biggest clubs with the most money and most resources. And I think not playing for 3 years didn't hold me in good stead for that time. And that's where a lot of the criticism and a lot of my game fell down because I wasn't able to go out and make mistakes to learn. And I was making those mistakes now in the A-League and under the big lights kind of thing. So I think, yeah, I needed more games and I was underdone when my time did come. Mm. And I think now I'm reaping the benefits of playing consistent football.
You were at Melbourne Heart, of course, in 2014 when the City Football Group took over. What was that like for you as players? There must have been an awful lot of excitement around the club because famously I remember the shot in the newspaper of the players who used to jump in the wheelie bins with the ice baths. And then all of a sudden there was this huge change over to an ultra-professional environment, which didn't come in straight away, but did you notice that change and how exciting was that for the players at that particular time?
Yeah, it was huge. I remember John DiLicca coming in at the time and said, the club's more or less been sold and it's big, it's really big. And players were guessing and throwing out all kinds of things, but we didn't expect it to be the City Football Group. And like you said, we kind of went from training down on the swampy kind of wetlands of the Trobe Uni up to the top of, half synthetic pitch that was like absolute carpet and everything kind of provided for you. It was quite a surreal experience and I think more of it needs to be provided in the A-League. I think that's the benchmark now and other clubs need to step up to that.
Why were Melbourne Heart and subsequently Melbourne City in the years that have gone by, I know you're not there any longer, but they've always had attractive players, attractive teams, particularly under John Van Skip, but never quite been able to make that breakthrough as a player who was there for, I think you were there for 2-3 years. Could you sense that there was something missing in the DNA of the club that prevents them from being winners, or is it just bad luck or something else?
Well, yeah, I it's probably not my field to talk on now, but back in the day, I think it's like when we're competing in the Champions League, it's just those few moments of concentration lapses or whatnot, and then teams have enough quality to punish you.
Okay.
John Crawley, talk us through the impact of him on your career. We just hear people waxing lyrical about Crawls and the impact he has on goalkeepers, and Matty Ryan's, I guess, the best exponent of that because of the stage he's on right now. But what makes him such a good goalkeeper coach?
He throws out the textbook. He takes a player, a goalkeeper, I should say, and he says, what attributes do you have and how can we utilise those attributes to make you the best goalkeeper you can be? The drills that we would do for Vuka when Vuka was there were completely different to the drills that I would stay behind and then work on after Vuka had gone in. And then it kind of morphed again into the season where I stepped in and started playing, and the philosophy of this is what a goalkeeper should do is kind of disregarded, and it says, Simon Hill, you're tall, you've got long reach, we're going to make that into your aspect. Whereas Matty's a bit shorter, but he's quick as lightning and he's agile as anything. So how do we mould that into the best goalkeeper we can be?
Interesting.
I'm interested in your personality in a sense, because you look at someone like Matty Ryan and you can tell how much belief he has in himself when you look at his face and how driven he is. You're a laid-back character when anyone meets you. You're chilled, you've got the beard, the sort of hipster kind of vibe about you. Does that perhaps belief in your own ability sometimes get hidden? I mean, is that as present as it is for other players, that belief that I can be as good as these other guys? Because a lot of people when they meet you would think he's just a laid-back character, Andrew Redmayne. He's not like a Matty Ryan who's so driven to be the absolute best.
Yeah, I'm still driven to be the best I can be, but I don't think I wear it on my face. And I think for me to get the boast out of what I can be is being relaxed. And I think you look at the Ryan Grants, the Ryan McGowans, they've been absolutely phenomenal, not only for the club but for my career as well. I mean, if I make a save these days, Ryan McGowan turns around and says, mate, why didn't you hold it? It's not hard. You got gloves on. Just catch the ball, which kind of fits into my philosophy of goalkeeping. But it's great that he can kind of turn around and kind of have that laugh, even when we're in the heat of the moment.
You're obviously at the peak of your career at the moment. I know that there was rumours of a bit of interest from overseas before you recently re-signed with Sydney FC. How serious were those rumours, and did you seriously consider going overseas? I think Bristol City was the club that was mentioned. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Yeah, Bristol came about through Bailey Wright.
Bailey Wright.
They were in need of a new goalkeeper, but they'd been chasing a goalkeeper for apparently a few years, and they finally had the opportunity to sign him, and it didn't come into fruition. But I never was personally contacted, or it never really, well, I'm not even really sure how that got out. It was just Bailey taking my name back to the club.
Right. Any interest from elsewhere? And did you seriously consider leaving Sydney FC? And, I mean, you're 31, so as a goalkeeper, you're right at the peak of your career. You've just won your first Socceroos cap, that I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment. Did you think maybe now's the moment, you know, after all those years ago at Arsenal and Sheffield United, maybe now's the point to go? Or have you always been, no, Sydney is first and foremost for me?
I think for every player, the dream is to play overseas, and I would love to test myself against the best, and the best kind of is in Europe. And I'd love to have that experience. My wife would like to have that experience. But I can only control what I can do, and that's keeping clean sheets for Sydney FC and winning trophies with Sydney FC. And if something was to come up, then I'd love to jump on it.
Great to hear you talk like that when only a couple of years ago you were thinking of retiring.
Yeah.
It's an amazing change, and you're in the national team as well, which is brilliant. Your first Socceroos cap, what did that mean to you? But also, how mindful are you of the battle for a place in the Copa America squad? Danny Vukovic is back now. Matty Ryan goes. It looks as if it's between yourself, Danny Vukovic, and Mitch Langerak for those two places supporting Matty Ryan. Are you aware of that battle, so to speak?
Yeah, but like I said, I can only control the controllables, and that's keeping clean sheets for Sydney FC. It would be an amazing experience to go to a Copa America, and it's something that I have written on my goal sheet. But having said that, I kind of know my place within Australian goalkeeping ranks, and I'll keep working as hard as I can because I know they're going to be, and I think that's what's going to drive Australian football forward.
What else is on your goal sheet? Not just football wise, but I know that you're also training to be a teacher with a little bit of help from the PFA. That's for post retirement, I would imagine.
Yep, I keep my goals on me for all time.
Here we go. He's got the piece of paper.
He's just taking it out of his phone cover. He's taking this piece of paper out.
Read them out.
Oh, I like to keep them to myself, but
give us a couple.
I tick a uni box every day, so I try and stay on top of my uni. I get in the salt water every fortnight. Some weeks it's hard with travel and whatnot, but salt water's big for me. Some easy ones are just keeping a positive outlook on life and football, self-belief, those kind of things. They're outside of football, but, yeah, there's football ones in there as well.
How many times a day do you check that, or how many times a week?
Probably three or four times a week.
Right. Okay, just helps to keep you in that in that zone, does it?
Yeah, keeps me focused.
And how often do you update the sheet?
Probably every 3 months or so.
Wow.
But then I also kind of write in little things that come to mind when I have a pen on me.
Good
That's
stuff.
Brilliant. Wonderful insight. Amazing what some people do that people just wouldn't imagine.
No.
They would do these sorts of things to stay at the top of whatever field you're in.
One more thing I want to ask you about on-field stuff. Penalties. Now, last year, obviously, you saved, I think, three during the regular season and then another couple in the grand final, very Schwarzer-esque against Perth Glory in front of 56,000. Prior to that, you hadn't really got a great record at saving penalties. But why did that change, or how did that change? And was it you who forced the change, or was it somebody else? Or was it John Crawley again?
Yeah, John Crawley again. he does a lot of research in those kind of things. But also there's a few moments I've had a great chat with Adam Taggart. There was a save against Brisbane Roar last year where he went away from his normal side. John was telling me to go to my right. He's taken to my left, and I've just kind of read the moment and gone to my left and made the save. But we also developed the wiggles, I guess, so to speak, about doing a little extra. And if you can make the penalty taker reserve them from their process for a split second, you're already interrupted their process, so you're already ahead of the game.
So you're trying to distract them, a la Bruce Grobbelaar with the
spaghetti legs.
Spaghetti legs.
Exactly.
That sort of stuff.
Yep.
And do you feel as though that works, as though it's a psychological battle between you and the penalty taker? Because everybody expects him to score. So really, all the advantage in many ways is with you, because if it goes in, everybody goes, oh, well, yep. If you save it, you're the hero.
Yeah. If saving a penalty and getting 3 points for my team means me making a fool of myself by doing a silly jiggle or a dance or something, then so be it. I'll do that every week.
Good stuff.
The Brendan Santelaar penalty. I hope Santa's not listening, because it was obviously a horrible moment for him. But can you spot that coming? Can you see, all right, he's going Panenka here and I've just got to hold my ground? Do you sort of analyse foot movements and things like that?
During the season, John would always show me probably the top two penalty takers. He would go back probably 2 years and show me every penalty they've taken. But before the grand final, John just said, do you trust me? And I said, yep. And he said, but there is one I want to show you. And we did go back through, and Santelaar was the only one we watched. And it was either a dink or what I would call the middle third in the window. Hmm. So we knew.
That was an FFA Cup game. I remember that one.
Yep.
Or a Champions League game, one of the two.
And if he wasn't going to Panenka, it would be in the middle third kind of window, and I could react. So, yeah, he came in, and I thought he was going to blast it, but I couldn't believe my eyes when it was kind of floating towards me.
Wow.
I did say after the game, my first reaction, my wife said, always laughs about it. She said in the heat of the moment, you know, players can get a bit aggressive or something, but my first words to my wife was, I might have been a bit disrespectful by punting the ball as far as I could. I hope I didn't.
Did you speak to Santa? Did you speak to him afterwards? Because obviously you were teammates at the Wanderers.
Yeah, I didn't speak to Santa. I haven't spoken to him since. So, I hope it wasn't two dishes for cooking at the time.
I don't think anyone even noticed, to be honest. It was such a chaotic period in the game, so I wouldn't worry too much about that. Speaking of the Perth Glory, before we get onto Twitter questions, so this has come through from that interview that I mentioned before on 6PR in regards to the London Football Exchange. This is the report. The company that wants to buy Perth Glory is facing a US $2.2 million lawsuit for fraudulent misrepresentation in the UK High Court of Justice. If that doesn't put an end to the deal, well, nothing does.
Okay. Other breaking news. Bernie Beeny has signed for the Newcastle Jets on a short-term deal.
More breaking news. More Twitter questions for Andrew Redmayne. Listen to your career is brilliant, mate. Honestly, we could go on for another half an hour. You've got some brilliant stories. But some of the listeners have put through some questions of their own. This one from Benny Archer. What is the best sledge you've heard from the crowd behind you in football?
Oh, that's a good question.
Probably anything not generic. Perth Glory, they have some great banter. I think being a goalkeeper, you're close to the crowd and you can kind of, if the ball's up the other end, you can always hear the individual voices. And I think Perth have some great witty banter. I can't think of any off the top of my head that would be the best. But
what's the one you hear most of all?
Oh, you'd have to beep it out.
I get a feeling there might be a few when you play Western Sydney on the weekend, but that's all part and parcel. This one from Kevin. What's your best attribute as a goalkeeper? What do you consider to be your main strength?
I said it before, probably my philosophy of goalkeeping. John Crawley brought in an offensive style of goalkeeping. So if I don't want to make a save, if I have to make a save, then the proverbial's already hit the fan. I'd prefer to sweep the back line high. I'd prefer to come and take a cross as opposed to defending a header on my line. So
being proactive.
Being proactive, yeah. So I don't want to have to make saves. I'd say the disallowed goal on the weekend, I was spitting chips that I didn't come and take that cross. And then they had another free kick a couple of minutes later and I just said, screw it, I'm just going to come and catch this. And I came and caught it and the pressure's off the team.
This from Adam Shearer. What's the key to your preparation to a game? We've seen your goal sheet and things like that, but when you're actually in the changing rooms an hour before.
Do you have a tune that you listen to or
no,
routine that you go through, right sock on first before you left? Or
I've started juggling.
Juggling?
Juggling, yeah.
But actual, not with the football. Not with magic juggling.
Clown juggling.
Clown juggling.
Are you good?
Oh, not that great. It's something.
How many balls can you keep in the air?
Just three. But we've started using different coloured balls, and the conditioning coach will call right hand, left hand, and you have to call the colour of the ball that's in your hand. It's something he brought in. Introduced to me that surgeons do it. They'll juggle, or race car drivers will juggle just to tune their fine motor skills and
it's to sharpen your reactions and improve the hand-eye coordination before you go out on the pitch.
Yeah, it's more just a mental preparation, switch on.
Interesting.
One final one. This is a completely different one from a person called Tommy Orr Account, which I think is maybe having a bit of a go at Tommy Orr for how many times he says when answering a question. I'm guessing that's what he's doing.
You can't get away with anything these days.
But anyway, he wants to know why footballers immediately remove the tape from around their socks after a game and just throw it onto the ground. Is there any reason for that or is it just frustration?
I don't use tape.
I'm guessing it's just, you know.
Well, I guess if you've had tape around your legs for 90 minutes, it's not the most comfortable thing. So you just want to get rid of it, don't you? And get some air on your legs, I would imagine.
Presume so.
Take your shin pads off and...
Odd question, but the odd ones sometimes catch our attention. A lot of other great questions there, but we did ask them to read as ourselves. So I'm sure you'll forgive us for not asking them from you directly. Andrew Redmayne, thanks so much for coming in on the Fox Football Podcast.
Pleasure, guys.
Cheers, Redis. Great to hear your story. Good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you. I won't have anything to listen to on the way to training because I've already
because you'll know
it.
All the answers.
Listen back to yourself, and make sure you keep listening through the rest of the season. Thanks so much, Simon.
Thanks,
Phil Pryor. To everyone who listens, thanks for your feedback. Redders, I'm sure you will agree, was a fantastic guest. So no doubt you enjoyed that one. And make sure you tune in during the week for Adam's podcast. And next week as well, we'll be back on Monday. Thanks so much.